Him down here, okay, to make sure that this thing is recorded today. All right, so, and Deborah, I'm sorry, Morganton,
yeah.
I'm from Hendersonville, just up the mountain a little bit, yeah, great.
Well, we have nothing, really.
Have nothing, so you're here trying to figure out how to get something going, okay. And here, you guys are not from the same church, okay. I know what you're looking for. You're kind of, he's got a unique environment. He's in the military, very transient group of people that know they're going to, and kind of similar to you guys back here a little bit in the same environment there. So you see, we all got different circumstances to work with. Yeah. Great. What are you looking for in Apex?
Oh, well, my church, I'm the rebel at my church because we have one.
Praise God!
We got one class 30 and up. Most of them are 60 and up in the class. And I want to start another class for 30s and 40s.
So what you're saying is we got a 30 and up, but we really got the up, okay?
And I tried, I suggested have another class, made people angry and cry, and they don't want to split us up, so we changed our name to Intergenerational Singles Classes. We help people come and visit a couple of weekends and they leave. The young people leave, they don't want to be in with all
sure.
the retired people, but retired people, and you're too young, I mean, it's like, so just
cool.
find a way to maybe start them in the ministry gently.
Okay. Marlene?
We don't have a singles program at all, and we're looking for something because we're discovering the growing need of singles within a large church.
Okay.
A lot of people should be talented.
Good. Well, all of you are here because in some way or another, Beth, I don't know, you're just here to hang out, right? Do I need to ask you any questions? Or okay, all right. But the idea behind the five questions that we're going to go through today are for you to take those and to realize these. Now, I'm not saying these are the only questions that need to be asked in a ministry. I'm not saying that you may have a different set if you were doing this. But I'm saying if you'll take these five questions that we go through today and ask yourself where you are in your ministry right now with those, whether you're an established ministry that just needs to go to another level, or whether you're a beginning ministry that doesn't have a clue yet what you need to do or how to get it going, or anything in between all of that. And hopefully, even Daniel and you guys that are more in the transitional military environment, that hopefully you'll be able to take these principles and find a niche in there that you can work with to make it an applicable thing in your area and in that. So the first thing that we want to look at as we talk about single adult, it's really more than fellowships. Now, singles ministries get a bad rap. Sometimes they deserve that rap because sometimes we as pastors, leaders, don't do a good job of balancing the social, the fun, and the spiritual part of a ministry. Okay, but in general, we just get a bad rap because we're considered to be meat markets. We're considered to be places where the singles are only coming because they want to hook up and meet people. And here's the truth. There is a lot of that takes place. There are a lot of single adults who just want, I mean, 95% of the people in your ministry want to be married. That's the reality of singles ministry. About 7 or 8 years ago, I interviewed with a pastor in a church position that he had, and he said, what's your 5-year plan? And I said, well, my 5-year plan is to work myself out of a job here. And he looked at me and he went, what are you talking about, man? And I said, well, 95% of all the singles in this ministry will want to be married. So my job is to come in to find them all a husband or a wife, heal the ones that have been through divorce and all those painful experiences they've been through, and work all that out, and they'll all be happy, and they'll go into your married adult ministries, and the other 5%, it doesn't matter. You can put them anywhere you want to because they're just happy, content, they're going to live life, or they're so miserable, they're never going to be happy no matter what they are, married or single. So, you know, it's that kind of deal. But the reality is this, single and adult ministry is not going away anytime soon. Divorce rate in America runs 50%. And unfortunately, even in the Christian community, it runs actually about 0.8 of a point higher than it runs in the secular world, which is a sad testimony to Christianity. Okay, and as we were talking about last night, reflecting the glory of God in our communities, and as Christians, we're failing in our marriages at a higher rate or about the same rate as the secular community is. So divorce is going to continue to be high, so there's going to be people coming in that way. Younger folks like yourselves back here, you're waiting longer. You're saying, wait a minute. I don't want to end up being a statistic on somebody's sheet somewhere, okay, that they talk about. And so they're waiting longer to make that decision to marry and things. So you've got all these dynamics. And then, of course, we have widows and widowers that fall into that as well. And so you put all that together, you've got a lot of single people. And I think Dennis shared yesterday it's about 44% nationwide, but in some parts it's as high as 60%, depending on the area. You live in an area like Atlanta or some of the other big cities where there's a lot of young professionals living in those areas. Memphis has a very high percentage of single adults in the community there because there's a lot of young professionals moving in and out of there. They're transient. They're only there a couple, 3 years usually, but you know they're moving in and out. So there's a huge opportunity. And so if you're at a church, large or small, okay, there's going to be an opportunity for you to do something in single adult ministry. So it's more than fellowships. So we want to ask these five questions. What is it that we need to ask ourselves as we evaluate our ministry, whether we're established or whether we're trying to get something going? The first question that we need to ask ourselves is, who is it we're trying to reach? Now, I'm going to explain a little bit about how this works. John 4:35 says, "Do you not say that there are yet 4 months, and then comes the harvest? And behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields. They are white for the harvest." Now, if you look in your community, and if all these statistics that I just rattled off and Dennis and guys were rattling off yesterday are true or even close to being true, the fields are ripe for a harvest. What we do, the challenge for us, and I'm not saying this is an easy challenge or an easy thing to come up with, but we need to figure out how to reach these people that are out there. Because I think I said yesterday, and I don't have anybody I can back it up with, I read this or heard it somewhere, so hopefully it's at least reasonably accurate, okay? But that of the 44%, 50%, or 60% that are single adults in the United States, 80% of them are unchurched. Not necessarily not Christians, but unchurched. Because what they've said is, the church is not relevant to me anymore. I don't get it. What the church is doing doesn't connect with me. Now, I grew up in Western North Carolina, just up the road here, about 3 hours. Part of the Bible Belt. Okay, and even though I was determined, if you heard any part of my testimony yesterday, I was never interested in becoming a Christian, and I was never certainly interested in being a pastor. You know, they weren't in my top 100 or 1,000 things probably to do or to become. But I was influenced, I was around it all the time because it was in the Bible Belt. Okay, and because of that, at least I had some exposure. I believed in God. I just didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. It wasn't that I didn't believe there was somebody bigger than me out there. I just had no relationship with it. But many of our people growing up today, especially probably under the age of 30, maybe under the age of 35, have grown up in homes that are broken homes. That have grown up in homes where maybe nobody went to church, or maybe only one parent goes to church, and so they're in church every other week, possibly, at best, that kind of thing. And so these people don't have the preconceived notion that everything revolves around church, that a lot of people that grew up in a more Bible Belt area kind of thing might be exposed to. And so they come with this attitude, this kind of thought of church. Like I was saying last night, I don't know that they're coming to hear us preach the first time they come. I'm not sure they're coming to hear your praise team or your choir or whatever it is that you have the first time they come. I think they're coming looking for relationship, coming for a place where they can connect and meet people and feel like they're cared for and that kind of thing. And so, as we look at that, there's a huge opportunity. The fields are out there. They're wide open for us to reach, specifically single adults. And if you're a senior pastor in here today, you know, it's a struggle, I think, for a lot of senior pastors. I've been in this a long time, 19 years almost 20 now. And I have yet, now, Joe is probably an exception to the rule because Joe used to be a singles pastor at one time. And he's the senior pastor here at Lawndale. But most senior pastors, you sit down with them and talk to them about single adult ministry, they don't have a clue what you're talking about. You might as well be speaking Spanish or French or you know, some other language. Now, I'm not saying that they don't care about them, and I'm not saying that they don't, you know, want to have single adult ministry in their churches and things, but they don't really get what this is all about. They don't really get the struggles. A very prominent pastor that I spent a lot of time with a few years ago. He and I were talking about this whole single adult thing, and you know, and his preconceptions and pre-notions of what single adults were the very kind of things that I just sat there and I listened to him, and I was like, do you really believe that? And it's not that he was not caring or wasn't concerned about it, but he just had no clue what it was. You know, they're the losers, the people that can't get their... Well, that's not true. Now, certainly there are people in our singles ministries that struggle socially and struggle with their careers and economically and all those kinds of things. But man, I've had some guys in my ministry that are, I mean, 4 years ago in a ministry I was in Columbia, South Carolina, I had the most prominent eye surgeon in the state of South Carolina, a single adult teaching Sunday school for me. A woman who's an entrepreneur who's probably a multimillionaire in my single adult ministry. You know, people with doctorates and all these kinds of things. I mean, they're not all, there's all these preconceptions about what singles ministry is and are not necessarily true. And so even senior pastors struggle, a lot of them, if not most of them, to really grasp the idea of what it is. So, but if you're a senior pastor, or if I'm a senior pastor, and I look at how can I grow a church, if I want to grow numerically, growth, I've got to look at single adult ministry. Because it's the largest part of the community out there that's, for right now, for the most part, untapped. 80% are unchurched. And so the challenge becomes for us is how do we get them attracted to the church? What makes it relevant to them? And that's going to be different probably for every one of us in this room. But we do that. So we start with who we're trying to reach. Well, let's start. You guys, I guess, I know some of you are younger than I am, but you probably at least have heard of Andy and Griffith and Andy Mayberry. And actually, it was kind of based right up the road here, wasn't it? About 45 minutes or something. But I love the characters in the Andy Griffith Show. First of all, have you ever noticed? Almost all the characters in there are singles. And this show was filmed in the early 60s, I think. You know, Andy's a single parent. Aunt B's a never married, I guess is the best I remember, single. Floyd and all those cats, I don't know, we don't know what Floyd was, but okay. But some of those other characters, you know, they were, most of them were single. Goober and Gomer and, yeah, you know, all that. So there's a lot of things we can glean from that. But I don't really use it for that reason today. I use it today for this reason. Now, I'm going to show you the characters, and beside them there's going to be a little definition. I want you to pay attention to the definition. Now, these are my definitions, so you don't have to agree with them, but for this class purpose, you have to accept that definition about that character, okay? So the first one is Andy. And most of us would look at Andy and we'd say he's pretty stable, logical, loyal, kind of down-to-earth kind of guy, very self-confident kind of guy in a kind of quiet way. And then we look at Barney. And Barney is just, no matter what he does, he somehow always manages to mess it up, right? But he's still lovable. He's kind of a dreamer. But he also probably suffers from a deep, low self-esteem if we look at him very closely. And then we look at Aunt B, and she's the sensitive, caring, but she's the worrier type, the worrier bee mom kind of thing, you know, going on. And then we've got Opie, and Opie's the inquisitive, innocent, trusting kind of kid. Always got a question, hey, Dad, or, you know, going to Barney or somebody and asking things. And then you've got Gomer. And Gomer is what I call the hidden treasure. You remember about Gomer? He's the guy that, golly, Sergeant Carter, you know, that kind of stuff. But then you hear him sing. And this incredible voice comes out of this guy, and he's, you know, and all that. So he's kind of the hidden treasure guy. And then you've got Otis. And Otis is looked at as a loser by society. He's the drunk, the town drunk. He wanders in, has his own key, you know, and just wanders in and takes care of things. And then you've got Clara. And Clara's the gossip and the meddler of the town, okay, and don't have much good to say about her. And then we got Floyd. He's able to run a business, but my question about Floyd is how? He never has more than three customers. It's always Andy and Barney and one of those other guys are the only three customers you ever see go in and out, and there's never anything going on, but somehow he's running this business, he's making a living, and you're just like, and then you listen to him talk and you're like, this guy can actually run a business, you know, but somehow it's happening. Okay? Now, what I want want you to do is think about those definitions, each one of them. And I want you to think about for just a moment who you personally most identify with. Who you think you resemble most up there. Are you an Andy? Or are you a Barney? Or are you a Aunt B? Kind of thing with your personality. Okay? So take just a second, think about that. And then what we're going to do is we're going to get all of, and let each one of you tell us who you think you are. Now the follow-up question is this. After you decide who you think you match up with, what would people say about you that are in your ministry or people that know you well? Would they agree? So in other words, if you identify yourself as an Andy, but would the people who evaluate you on a day-to-day basis, would they see you as an Andy or would they see you as an OP or who would they see you as? Okay, so let's start with, first of all, who do you see yourself as being? All right. How many of you see yourselves as being an Andy? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Did you have your hand up? Okay, 8. All right, 8 Andys. See, y'all are the kind of the cocky people. We got it going on. We know what we're doing. Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm an Andy too, so it's all right, you know. All right. So we got 8 Andys, all right? How many of you see yourselves as being an OP type? Sensitive or inquisitive. Ask it. Now you said rebellious. You didn't say questioning, did you? No, no. Okay, all right. All right, so we got an OP, okay? Anybody here see themselves as a Clara? Y'all are lying through your teeth. All right, no Claras. All right, good. How about a Barney? Anybody see themselves as a Barney?
I see Elvis and a Barney, I think,
in me. Okay, that's cool. Except you'd never get the gun out of it. You'd pull it out and you'd drop it and shoot yourself in the toe or something. Okay. Anybody see themselves as a Gomer here? Okay, good. Okay, that's good. Anybody see themselves as a Floyd? You get it done, but you look back at the end of the day and you don't have a clue how you did it. It just worked out. Anybody see them as Aunt B, the warrior type? Okay. Anybody see themselves as an Otis? Today?
End of the day.
Oh, end of the day. Okay. All right. Good. All right. Now, you see who you are. Now, anybody that identified yourself as whatever character you identified with, would you now say if people were looking at you, people in your ministry, if you're a pastor or a leader of a ministry, or maybe your workplace, family, I don't know, would they see you in the same light? Would they, if we were doing the same little exercise with them, would they look at you and say, Tom, you're an Otis, or you're a... Okay? Anybody here change now from where you were from looking at it from somebody else's perspective? All right? You're shaking your head yes. So how would you think people see you?
I think people would see you more as Andy.
Okay.
So if I could put on a good show or a good front, you know, pastoral responsibility.
Okay. So what we're saying is, at least the three of you, okay, is that people see us as the stable, confident leader type, but deep down we've got another thing going on with us. Okay. All right. Who else would see something different, okay, how you answered it for yourself, but how you think people might perceive you at this point? I'm sorry?
I don't think people see
okay. How do you think people see you? You described yourself as a gummer, but
all the time, just because of what I do and you know where I am, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I did kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to tell.
Okay.
But problem I'm going.
Okay, that's good. Anybody else? Yes.
I see myself as more of an Andy, but I'm sure.
Really? Interesting. So she sees herself as Andy, but she thinks that people would see her more like a Floyd, a guy that gets it done, but kind of go, how'd she do that? Okay, because, okay, that's great. Good. Anybody else? Yes, Arlinda.
I see myself as Andy, but at work, people think I'm aggressive.
Like what?
Aggressive.
Okay.
Very aggressive. I hit the point, and most of the time people are scared of me. And they think I will go tell but I'm not the type to go tell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they might see you as a clairer then, as a gossip maybe?
I never do. No,
oh.
It's not a gossiping
thing. Oh, okay.
It's not like a gossip. It's like when they get out of line,
oh, okay.
They think I'll be the one that will kind of go to the top and say, this got to stop. And we have to straighten because I'm very strict. Very, very strict at work.
Okay.
And at church, I don't know what they think about me, but you can tell you what they think about me, but I think...
We'll get Tom to tell us later. Okay.
But I think most of the time they look at me like angry.
Okay. Anybody else want to take a different look at yourself?
I think it depends on who you're with. I'm sure that I'm also a youth minister in my church too, so I'm sure my youth look at me a little bit differently than that, because now that you know, sometimes today you really have to put your foot down with them because they just do things that just start totally disruptive in church and things like that. Especially with cell phones.
Yeah.
Or if they get up and start speaking and talking while you're praying and things like that, and maybe you come off a little bit differently for things like that, or as more on your peers, you may hear different things too. So I guess it depends on who you're with and how people perceive you.
Okay. Now, the purpose really of going through this, more than for you to identify with some character from Andy Mayberry, is to say this. In single adult ministry, you have every one of those kind of people that come through your doors in your ministry. Okay? And so when we're talking about this idea, who are we trying to reach? Well, first of all, here's all the kind of different characters that are out there that you're potentially going to reach. And some of them are going to come through, and they're going to be people that can lead and all those kinds of things, and they're going to be dynamic personalities and outgoing and all that. And then you're going to have some people that are like a Claire. They're going to cause you problems because they're going to gossip about you and about other people, and they're going to make your life miserable. And then you're going to have people that worry about everything. Oh, can I come in and have a meeting? Oh my gosh, you had cupcakes at the meeting, the event the other night, and I don't know what we're going to do because we don't have enough icing to go on that, and I don't know how we're going to... You know, you've got everything, and it's just petty stuff sometimes. And then you've got people like Gomers who show up in your ministry, and you look at them, you go, great, glad you're here. And then you get to know them, and you find out that they've got this gift or this incredible passion or heart for something that you would have never known if you didn't take the time to get to know them. And then you've got guys like Floyd that just show up and they get some things done, and it drives you crazy. I'm a type A personality, so I like to see things happening, you know, in some kind of fashionable order to some degree. And the Floyds drive me crazy. My wife is a Floyd. And she was my activities director of my singles ministry years ago. And I had to learn to let go, because it was one of those things where I needed to give them the responsibility, but I also need to empower them to do it, because it was driving me crazy. We'd have an event coming up on Friday night, and it'd be Thursday, and she hadn't done doodly squat for it. And I'd be sitting there going, oh my gosh, this thing's going to crash and burn, you know. And then she would pull it off, and it would be 10 times better than anything I could have ever done, because she's incredibly gifted and very creative in what she does. And I finally had to come to a point. Now, this was long before she's 10 years younger. We didn't date for 10 years after that, okay? So this was not while we were having a relationship, really, other than just pastor and layperson. But God just convicted me after about 2 or 3 events, because I was driving myself crazy. And I just like, I got to let go of that. Because she gets it done, and she gets it done well. She just doesn't do it the way I would do it. And now I'm married to her, and boy, we have some interesting times now sometimes with things, you know, and that. But anyway, so you've got people like a Gomer. And then you've got the Barneys. And God bless them, they come in and they want to serve, and they come right up to you and, please let me, I can do this and I can do that. And you're thinking, because you need it to get done, right? And you're thinking, well, that's great. And then they go do it, and they spill everything, knock everything over, you know, mistype it, whatever it is that you got them doing, and they just... But they're just lovable people. You can't help but love them, even though they just mess everything up for you at various times. And then occasionally you get a few people that come in that really are what the society would say are the losers of the world. The people that just can't hold a job, the people that, you know, have all kinds of different struggles, addictions, whatever it may be with that. And you're going to have all these people. If you've got an established ministry, you've already got them there. Now the trick is, what do we do? How do we do that? How do we keep it from not destroying our ministry? Because all these things don't necessarily work together to build an enhancing ministry. And so, but the first thing you got to know is these people are there and they're going to be there. So who are we trying to reach? I did this, this was when I was in Columbia, South Carolina. So these were statistics that were available in the year 2000. And if you haven't done this already, you need to take the time to dig through and find out what the environment around you is in the city that you live in or the area that you're trying to reach. And see, first of all, where single adults are. How many of them are there? And where are they? Now, depending on what size city you live in, for instance, in Columbia, South Carolina, it's a college town. University of South Carolina is there, so you got a lot of younger folks in the college range, but then you've got a lot of young professionals there who stick around 2 or 3 years after college and take a job there in Columbia, work in, you know, one of the government buildings or whatever, and work with that. Okay, and so there was a huge opportunity for us to reach younger singles. But then there's also, because of our population, with the divorce being as high as it is, there's a lot of divorced people there. And so some of the things that we began to do is we figured out, as we took these demographics and figured out what was out there, that began to define for us who we wanted to reach. We knew we could reach, there was an opportunity to reach younger singles because there was nobody reaching them there. We knew there was an opportunity to have an effective divorce care, single parenting type ministry because there was a large population of folks like that in the area. And then we also knew, because of the demographics of that particular city, that there were a lot of people 30 plus who were single adults living there. So really, for us in Columbia, we had a great opportunity because we had just about every pocket of people that you could imagine to go after. And so we were fortunate enough to have good leadership, and we were able to establish a good divorce care ministry, and we were able to establish some things that got our younger singles ministry going really well there. And then we had the 30, 35, 40 plus group, you know, was going pretty well already, and we were able to extend upon that. So you got to look at the demographics. So like where you are in Jacksonville and military, I'm assuming it's probably a lot of folks under 30 for sure, and transient, so they're only going to be there a certain amount of time for sure, but that's obviously a target group for you to figure out, you know, what to do with that. And for the rest of you that live in different cities and things, I'll give you an example. I was doing some consulting work for the state of South Carolina a few years ago, and I had a group of ladies that came up, four black ladies came in to this setting that we were talking about, and they were sitting here and they were taking these five questions. They were saying, well, you know, at the end we had Q&A, and they said, well, we just don't really know what to do because we are the singles ministry. They brought all four of them. That was it. And the church ran about 60 people. That was the whole church. And then there's four singles, and they were all four single females. And they said, what do we do? And I said, well, tell me a little bit about where you live. And I don't remember the name of the little city, but it was a little rural area in South Carolina that's down towards Beaufort or wherever it is, down towards Hilton Head, down towards the beaches. But it was a rural area down in there. And it was just a small little community. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about the community there. And they told me a little bit about it, and it was a predominantly black area, okay. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about the singles that you know that are in that area. He said, well, there's a lot of single moms there. And I said, well, there's your answer. For your singles ministry, what you need to go as target is a ministry to single moms. Because if that's what God is saying, you know, if you've read Experiencing God, for those of you who remember that from by Henry Blackaby, he says in there, he says, when you look out and you see what God is doing around you, that becomes your invitation to become a part of that and to work with that. And so for these ladies, their answer was to start a single moms ministry. A year later, they came back to the same conference. I was doing the same thing for the state of South Carolina again. and they came up and hugged me, and one of them planted a big old kiss on the side of my cheek and said, "Thank you, praise God." I said, "We started a single mom's ministry there, and last week we had 32 single moms there." Started with four ladies with a heart and a vision. And they looked out and looked at the demographics of their community, and they said, "Single moms, that's the answer for us." Now, that doesn't mean it has to be your answer, but you need to look and see what's out there and what those things are. And you don't have to apologize. If you've got a large population of divorced people, then have a strong divorce ministry, divorce recovery ministry, and do that. If you've got a lot of single parents, then have a strong single parent ministry. And if you have the ability, some of you that are bigger churches and more established ministries, you've got to look across the board, because you have the ability to be more balanced probably in what you can do and take approaches in with that. So find out what the demographics are and work within that. Now, there's going to be a lot of time at the end for Q&A, so just kind of hang in with your questions, write them down, and we'll take time. This is something that my pastor a few years ago in Columbia kind of shared with me that I thought was just really a neat thing. But in every ministry, you've got a core group of people. All right? And in your singles ministry, you've got a core group. And depending on the size of your group, it may be two people, it may be 15 or 20, and you know, that kind of thing. But you've got a core that you're working with. Now, unfortunately, that core is the smallest part of everything we're going to look at here. But the challenge becomes is, what do we do within the core to bring them to different stages? So the next stage is, we want to move them from the core, or excuse me, from the next group out from that, or are involved participants. These are the people that probably aren't even your church members. They probably just show up pretty regularly. Now, I don't know about you guys that are in singles ministry. I used to figure they were a regular in my singles ministry if they came twice a month, okay, to Sunday school, all right? Because they're just transient. They're going to go home and see mom and dad every now and then. They're going to go to the beach, or, you know, I lived in Columbia. We were 2 hours from every major beach in the southeast. I mean, it's a great area to live in, so people were gone all the time to, you know, do stuff like that. But anyway, you've got your core. Then you've got these people that just, they come in, they'll serve a little bit, but they'll, you know, be there, be at your events, and all that kind of thing. Then you've got another group on the outside, and that's just your interested spectators. These are the guys that are just going to come in, and they're going to take everything they can from your ministry. Now, I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that if you're having a dance, they're going to come and have fun at the dance. If you're having a cookout, they're going to come and eat your hot dogs and hamburgers and hang out with your people and all that, and that kind of stuff. But they're not going to give a whole lot back to your ministry. And then you got another group outside of that, which is the world. And these are the people that John, that passage in John that we just read talks about. There's people out there, unchurched people, lost people, that need somehow to be brought in. So when you're putting together a ministry, and depending on your size and what your resources are, I realize there's different challenges in all this. And so you've got to take it in increments or baby steps depending on what, you know, your needs are and what your abilities are at this time to be able to do that. But your goal is to have, you're going to have events or something. Something that is attractive, that's relevant to people under the age of 30 that are in the military, that will, they'll come to. And I don't know what the answer to that is, okay? But hopefully you guys do, because you are in that position to know that. And so you've got to have something. Cookouts, dances, karaoke night, whatever it is that, you know, that would be something that they would be attracted to, so that you can attract them from the world to have the first initial opportunity to be able to talk to them about Jesus, but also to begin to gradually implement them and move them into your church life. Okay? Then you get them into the interested participants. From the world to the interested. And then your next step is to try to move them from the interested into the involved. And then hopefully you build your core from that. Okay? So, again, lots of opportunity. You're also dealing with singles who, you know, yesterday I describe it and I do it kind of laughingly, but it's the dark pit of the world, because when you're single, you don't know how long you're going to be single. It's not like, you know, you can take a career thing and say, hey, you know, in 3 years I'm going to move to the next level of this or whatever. It's like, I'm single. All right, if you believe in God and you're trusting God, I'm trusting you, God. Well, I was single until I was 42. Okay? Now, I did not expect to marry early in my life. That was never a thing that I thought would happen for a lot of different reasons than it ended up being. I was voted the least likely in my high school to ever marry because everybody thought I was such a playboy and a guy that would just never settle down. I never dated the same person more than 3 months. And if I dated her for more than 3 months, I cheated on her the whole time I was dating her. So, you know, it was just that kind of thing. So that's how that was perceived. But then when I met Jesus and I go into singles ministry, his plan and purpose was to keep me single for a period of time, probably more than anything, to allow me to be able to be relative to the people that I was working with. And so I ended up being single till I was 42. Now, I thought I'd probably get married when I was 34, 35, 36, somewhere along there, you know, no big rush about it. But 42 was, when I turned 40, it was kind of like, ooh, maybe I'm who Paul's writing about. Maybe I'm the guy who is destined to be single, okay? So that thought really kind of kicked in. And then my best friend, who had been single as well, and he's about my age, and he got married when he was 40. I'm thinking, ooh, I think I now have kicked into the possibility of that. But the point in all that is to say is that we've got all these people and we want to bring them into the core, but you're dealing with people, and here's part of the reason they don't commit. Because they're in the dark hole of singleness and nobody knows how long that season is. So it could be 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 42 years. You know, you don't know what that season is. So a lot of them, even though they're gifted and even though to some degree they have some interest, they won't sign up at the window because, gosh, if I commit, I probably just buried myself in the dark pit of singleness for another 3 or 4 years. And so they're reluctant because in the back of their minds they're always thinking, I'm thinking by next year I'll be married. Or at least I'll be in a significant relationship that's leading towards that or whatever. And so they kind of hold back from giving that. So we've got to create an environment that is healthy for growth and people going through that, but to change the perception of what singleness really is. Now, the younger group, they don't even want to be called single anymore. You call them single, and they come up, I'm going to put you in the nose, man. Don't call me single. I ain't single. I'm just not married. I didn't get that for a while. I was a slow learner, okay? But I was sitting down with one of my ladies in Columbia a few years ago, and we were talking through this. I asked, why are our younger people so reluctant to come and do things? And she just looked at me and said, well, first of all, you keep calling us single. And she said, I'm not single. I said, really? Now, there's no ring on your hand. You don't have a husband. But you're not single. No, I'm not married. And in her mind, it was this huge difference. And it was like God just slapped me upside the head and said, you see, there's this huge difference in the way they see themselves now. Changed my whole philosophy of ministry, ministering to them. I thank that girl every time I've seen her. Because it changed. God used her to change the way I was looking at things. And you've got to be flexible and pliable with God in this kind of ministry. Because it changes. Yes, sir.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
And I've experienced this too. I wonder why people that are in a relationship or dating don't think that that means they're single. Because I know when we try to recruit singles into the ministry, and you mention something about the singles ministry, and they'll say, oh, I got somebody. Well, what does that have to do with whether you're single or married?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I can answer that from the... You have the same problem?
Never understood that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They'll be dating, but they'll go into the married couple Sunday school classes instead of a singles class.
Yeah.
I think part of that has to do with maybe they're afraid that if they continue in singles ministry that some of the other singles would be a threat to their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably true. There's probably a lot of... Yeah. Well, that's a good question. And maybe we can dialogue some more of that towards the end. I want to kind of run through this just so you can bring your questions and we can just kind of have an open time of doing that. So anyway, you kind of get this and you see the gist of this and what you've kind of got to do to work through in your ministry. So the next question we got to ask ourselves, what's our vision? Matthew 28, 19 and 20. This is a passage, a verse that you guys read and hear. Your pastors preach on it all the time, okay? Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Well, what is this telling us? It tells us, because we already know there's a huge opportunity out there, that we are commanded in Scripture to go after that opportunity. I still believe that senior pastors, especially in churches that have the means, okay, that are large enough and things to be able to have the financial means and things to, they need to really see single adult ministry as a significant part of their church life, because, like as we said earlier, it's not going away. It's going to be there for a long time. And we've got to find ways. And even if you're in a smaller church or a smaller singles potential, there's still needs. Not everybody wants to go to a big church. Okay, so they're going to want to do different things with that. So we all got an opportunity. But it's okay. I never apologized. And I don't know if I will in the future. And maybe in heaven I will. I don't know. But I have not apologized yet on earth. Because my vision statement has been to reach as many single adults as possible with the love of Jesus Christ. And so I don't apologize if I'm in your town for having an aggressive attitude about reaching single adults. Now, I'm not coming after your people. That happens sometimes, you know. People shift around because of what's going on or what they like better. They like a pastor better. You know, all that kind of stuff. But I'm not a threat to you personally. But I'm not going to apologize for trying to fulfill the Great Commission. And you don't need to apologize either. Whatever your vision is, whatever you create for your single adult ministry, you need to do it as unto the Lord. And let Him be responsible for who He brings to your ministry versus who He might bring to your ministry versus who He might bring to your ministry. So, you know, because I was, for the most part, always in mega-type churches and we had larger singles ministries, you know, people sometimes saw me as a threat to them. And if you get to know me, you find my heart is I just love people. And I'm really no threat. I'm not trying to steal your people. I could care less about that. Matter of fact, I call it trading slobber. And I don't like it at all. Okay, because there's so many people, this 80% of the 40 or 50% that are unchurched out there, is why would we want to trade with each other when there's all this potential to reach people that nobody's reaching? I doubt very seriously there's anybody in Jacksonville that's found a really good way yet to reach the people you're trying to reach. And that's why you're here, because God wants you to go back and have some kind of creativity and vision to be able to do that. And most of you in your town, whether it's a small church, large church, or whatever it is, God is saying to you today, that's why you're here. Let's go back and start a new Sunday school class, because so what? Some people are going to get mad and it's going to ruffle their feathers, but you know what? The potential maybe is to reach lots of people, 30s or younger. Whereas if we keep it the way it is, we're never going to grow beyond where we are, kind of thing. Okay? So, our vision is to reach people and to go after people. Singles minister to your church. This was mine. Now, these are just things. You don't need to take these. Certainly, you guys can come up with better ideas than I do, okay? And that's fine. But I'm just giving them to you as examples so you can kind of see what we're talking about. So, to reach as many as single adults. That was our vision. The next thing we need to talk about is our mission. And that comes up here from Matthew 22:37-40. You heard me teach on this last night if you were here. I've built my whole philosophy of ministry around these verses and these two commands. And I believe you can take these two commands. Now, you may do ministry different from me. You may have different programs than I would have, or whatever it is that you come up with in your ministry. But if you will point people and show people and guide them to a deeper relationship where they love God more and they love and care for other people, you'll see good things happen in your ministry. Whether you have dances, whether you have cookouts, whether you have karaoke nights, whether you have any of those concerts, whatever it may be that you choose to do with your programming, if you will point them to God and they come in and they feel like somebody loves and cares for them, good things will happen in your ministry. Okay? So, the mission is to love God and to love others. So, here was the mission statement that I came up at Shandon when I was there. To be a safe place where singles can connect with God, and each other. There are a lot of people out there, singles, who want to be around other people. A lot of them are not Christians, and they don't necessarily want to be in bars and believe we're smoking and all those kind of... I mean, I was in bar life for a lot of my, you know, early years. And there's a lot of people that just want to come and have fun and be around other fun people. And so we need to create a safe environment. And if ladies come, we need to have a safe environment, because if they're coming by themselves, they want to know they can come somewhere where hopefully there's some guidelines there. They don't want to be hit by all the predators every time they walk through the door. And we as pastors, as leaders, have got to build things in place to help that or keep that from happening, or at least to manage it to some degree. You can't fully control it. You can't. You know, it's like I had a very fundamental pastor in Western North Carolina. What time do we have to be done? Okay. A very fundamental pastor in Western North Carolina who came to me one day and he says, do you know that you got some homosexuals coming to your ministry on Friday night? And I said, well, yes, sir, I do. He said, I've been meeting with them one-on-one and talking with them about where they are in life. And he says, well, I just want you to know, if you're going to let those people come, that I'm not going to let my singles come to your stuff. And I said, well, gosh, I'd hate to see your folks not come, but God bless you. I hope whatever you're doing is good. Because here's the point. If they're coming to your ministry and your events and the things that you're doing, you have some potential influence over their lives for some period of time. If they don't come, you got nothing. And so, we used to have people, I'd have people say, well, I was the first guy. Where's the radical? Okay, all right. 1988, I had a dance. Southern Baptist Church, and we're dancing. We got secular music. Hello. Now, I had my shoulder-length hair in those days, you know. I was pretty proud of myself, you know. The more feathers I could ruffle, the better I thought it was. But I had another fundamental pastor come to me one day. And he says, Freddie, you know, he says, I have a great respect for you and what you're doing in singles ministry. And we've always allowed our singles to come to your stuff and, you know, da-da-da-da and all that. And he said, but I hear that you're going to have a dance on New Year's Eve. He said, there's a rumor going around. You're going to have a dance on New Year's Eve. I said, and I won't use his name because you might possibly know who he is. But I said, well, let me just put you to rest, man. It's not a rumor. We're going to do it. And we're expecting 200 or 300 people possibly to show up to this thing, you know. And he said, well, you needn't expect that any of my singles will be there. And they won't be coming to any of your events in the future either. I said, well, so-and-so, thanks a lot. And I'm sorry you feel that way, but we're going to have the dance. Well, we threw our first dance, I think it was 1988. And had a really good response to it. People from all over came. People drove up from Greenville, South Carolina to it. And everywhere else, you know. And I had more people, more singles from his church start coming to our ministry than we'd ever had before. After he went back and told them, I guess, don't go there anymore and all that kind of stuff. But I say all that simply to say, singles need a safe environment that they can come to. Now, I'm not here to argue one way or the other whether, you know, there's certain theological things that your pastors and things are going to be okay with and not, okay? That's not the debate. You can find things to do. You create the environment no matter what programs or what events or whatever you do with that. So what are the pillars? Here's the thing that all of us have to be reflective of, and this kind of ties in what I just said. What are the pillars of your church that are non-negotiable? So that means you've got to sit down with your senior pastor and say, all right, what are the things that absolutely, that if we're going to have a singles ministry, you're going to be okay with it, or we're going to be required to be in, and what are the things you're going to flat out say no to? Because if you don't have that understanding going in, you're going to be constantly at odds with the senior pastor, you know, as things go along. And he's going to get heat eventually. You know, you don't think the senior pastor that I was under when I threw a dance in 1988 didn't get grief? But here was his comment to me. His philosophy was, and I heard somebody else say it here this weekend, his philosophy was, I want you to do something at least once a month that gets back to me to where I have to defend you. Now, he wasn't talking about getting in trouble and stuff like that. He was just saying, I want you out there doing things and reaching people and people groups that nobody else is doing anything with. And I want my phone to ring and say, that's singles ministry. Or he's out there, he's talking to people down in the black community. Or he's over here working down at something down in the homosexual community down there. Or he's doing this or he's doing that. Or he's having dances on New Year's Eve. Because he wanted to hear that we were active in doing things out there, that we're trying to reach people that other people weren't reaching. So what are the non-negotiables in your church? Every church has them. Don't think they don't. Now, they may be called pillars. They may be called, what do you call them here? You got them. I mean, there's something that's in there where Joe, it's 5, 6, 7 things probably. And so what do y'all call them here?
We would use the term pillar.
Okay. So do's and don'ts, okay. But sit down with your pastor and make sure. I'll give you just an example so you know what they were. It's Shandon, Dr. Lincoln, brilliant man, but he's got a plan. All right, he's got a plan about it. And there's 5 pillars at Shandon Baptist Church. And if you are going to be on staff there, you adhere to these 5 pillars. 1, they're a church that believes in giving. Giving in a lot of different directions. So he preaches and talks about giving. He is Sunday school driven. That's a non-negotiable at Shandon. Now, you can create small groups in different things, but Sunday school is the primary thing. So that's a non-negotiable there. All right, worship is a non-negotiable. That includes preaching and worship styles and all those kinds of things, okay? Let's hope I can remember all 5 of them. I've been gone a little while, okay? Evangelism, all right, is a 4th pillar there. And I think I'm going to draw a blank on the 5th one. But anyway, there were 5 pillars there. And those were the non-negotiables at that church. So sit down with your pastor. Know what those non-negotiables are so that you're not going to be at odds with him at some point when you get to a philosophical place. So talk through it with him in advance. What are the key administrators? Here's just an example of what I did. Again, you guys can come up with better ideas, but there were basically these 6 things that we used in our singles ministry at Shandon. I was there 4 years, and it doubled in the 4 years I was there. The under 30 group quadrupled in those 4 years. And most of that quadruple growth came in the last year and a half because we came up with some creative ideas that just God touched and blessed, and they were just neat things. So you don't have to use these, but these are based around, to some degree, your pillars that you've got to work from. So Sunday school. So we were going to have it. That was a non-negotiable, and these are some of the things we did in it. We were going to train people, and here's what we did some of those things over there. We had monthly meetings those kinds of things. We had special leaders retreats and things so that we could keep people trained and keep new people coming in and up to speed on things. We used retreats as an opportunity to reach out to the community as well as to grow people in our own ministry. We used outreach. At our church, we had a Tuesday night, the old traditional Baptist church Tuesday night. And you know, when I went there, I hadn't been in a church that had done that in years. And I was a little skeptical, to be quite honest. And God used my 4 years there and that to change my perspective on that. I was there 4 years, and God gave me the privilege of leading 23 people to Christ, and almost all of them came through a visitation where we intentionally went out to a home to follow up with someone that had visited our church. Now, I'm not saying you need to do that. I know it's old-fashioned, and I'll be honest with you, I wrestled with it when I went there. I thought, oh boy, I just walked back into the backwoods about, 10 years in ministry or something. But now I wouldn't change that experience for anything. So, but you need to find out whatever that is. We did things on, we called them Shandon Nights. We did them once a month. We rented out the State Museum in Columbia. And we would invite the community. And we'd have comedians or dances or, whatever it may be. And have things like that and use it as an outreach to the community as well as to have something for our folks. And then we had Sunday morning Bible studies. We had small groups. We had a thing called Shandon University, which was kind of like elective type classes. And then through ministry, we worked with divorce care, single parent. We did service projects and mission trips. So those are just some ideas. Again, you guys have your own ideas and your own creativity about that, but that just gives you a little bit of an example of how that could look. All right. We run through 5 questions. What questions do you have in relation to any of this? We've got about 15 minutes, so we can spend a few minutes talking about this. And
I was in one church, and what we would do was kind of network with the other single churches. Well, when our teacher found out that one of the churches we went to, we had line dance, and they had somebody come in and do the line dance, and she was just, beside herself that we had gone to another church and danced. What do you do in that situation?
The question is, okay, what about dance? And in this case, you went to another church.
Yeah, we would do with each church. It was like five churches, and each month the different church would host our event.
Yeah, okay, and so they had a dance at theirs. Okay.
Yeah, they had a lady come in that was a line. She taught line dancing, and that's what we did.
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, now some of you are in churches where, for the most part, you can hold your own events. I mean, like you got a big enough ministry that you kind of do your own thing, okay? Obviously, there you've just got to sit down with the pastor and make sure he's okay with it. And if he's okay, you go for it and you're good. When you're in a smaller church, first of all, I like the idea, and I think it's a good idea. I think Dennis touched on this yesterday, that if you're in a smaller church, get with three or four or five other churches, but they got to be similar-minded. That's the challenge in it, okay? I think it's great when you can cross denomination, and you can find get Baptists and Presbyterians and Methodists and all those people working together on things like that. But then you're going to get to these crossroads, like certain things, okay? Like dancing is still a controversial issue in church, okay? And especially if you're in a Baptist church, it's probably a high probability you're either okay with it or you're not okay with it, and there's no in between in it, okay? And so. There again, you have to be respectful of your pastor, okay? And the truth for me was, actually, I was trying to build a metro thing in Memphis where I was at, and this became an issue. We were working with a Presbyterian church and a community church there, and we went through a horrible church split while I was there. Went from 6,000 to 2,000 in one Sunday. So 4,000 people walked out the door, kind of thing, horrible thing. And now the new philosophy there is much more fundamental, and not that that's a bad thing, but that was one of the things that I was told when the new regime came in is these dances you've been having, you need to stop, and these other things. And for me, that was God's clear calling to me that I needed to begin to Well, I mean, they can make a case, and their case can be good. I mean, I'm not arguing one way or the other. I'm just saying there's different ways to look at it. And for me, with God and my relationship with that, I'm okay with it. And so I can go there, and so I'm going to try to be in a church with a pastor who is okay with working with it.
Did you move on from that church when they told you you couldn't do it?
Well, I'm in transition right now. Okay.
To reach the outside, you have to reach the outside through.
But the thing that you got to remember, and all of us have to remember, okay, I didn't argue that one day when that conversation was given to me, because I am to submit to the authority that I've been placed under. And one of two things will happen. Either God will change their heart or mind at some point, or God will give you the freedom to turn your palms up and say, okay, God, where do you want me to go from here? And that's a little different for me because it's a vocational thing, but for you, it's similar. You're at this church, you're under that pastor's authority, and you need to respect that for as long as God keeps you there, and that doesn't mean you can't dialogue with Him once in a while and see if there's any change in that, but you also need to be very respectful of the fact He is the pastor, and you need to respect Him with the position that God has given Him in that church. So I don't know if that really helps you or not, but that's probably the best answer I can give you on it right now. Other questions?
On the last slide, you noted that prayer was very important. And I would like...
Thank you for bringing that up. That's great.
And some from the other participants as well, and how you can incorporate it. How do you handle that? Do you have small groups together and praying specifically for specific events or on an ongoing basis?
Now, that's a great question. Thank you for bringing it up, because I totally rode by that. And you see this inner circle? What that means is everything that's going on this outside is bathed in prayer. And to answer specifically your question, here's what my philosophy on prayer is. I think I touched on this a little bit yesterday for some of you that were in there. But The first thing I do when I go to a new church, into a new singles ministry, is I go in and I find out who the prayer warriors are. Now, generally speaking, it's a very small group of people. All right? The largest prayer warrior team I've ever had has been 6 people, and I've been doing this for 19 years. And the smallest one I've ever had is 2 people. Now, what I mean by that is not, I can get people. Oh, I can walk in and preach a sermon on prayer and people get all motivated. Hey, yeah, sign us up, man. We're going to pray and we'll be part of a prayer chain and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But you know what happens? They don't really have a passion or heart for it. And so what happens is they get busy. They get the email to pray or they get the phone call to pray and they're busy and they don't do it. And so your chain gets broken and all that stuff. So what I'm looking for is that inner core of a handful of people that I know that if I can pick up the phone and call you, and I know you'll pray no matter what you're doing. If you're at work, you'll just stop for a minute and pray for whatever I've asked you to pray for. Or if it's an event that we've got coming up, you know, a big monthly thing that we were doing, then this inner core of people would pray. Pray for salvations, pray for opportunities, pray for opportunities for us to share. Just pray that people would come. That it would just be what it was intended to be an outreach to the community and pull people in. And so we would have prayer for that. Anytime that I was speaking outside of our church, my inner core of people were praying. Now right now, I don't have that inner core because I'm in transition. My wife is my prayer warrior. She's praying this morning while I'm here that God will use me in this opportunity. She prayed last night while we were together in the assembly time last night. Okay, so that's what I mean about the inner circle of prayer. It's not necessarily a big ministry, but it's the people who will be faithful to pray for you as a pastor, to pray for the events or whatever it is that you might be trying to do in that. Okay? So, but thank you for bringing that up because I totally rode right by it. All right, what else? Questions? Yes?
For the prayer thing, we are in the process of getting one started on church. It's just involved in a single ministry. And I think I am the third person on the list. Since we got started, I have got one phone call. We probably have to go almost any about a month or longer. And
it's the same problem that you have overall is that they commit, if you can get them to commit, but then the real heart and passion to do it is not there. Something else came up, you know, or they just don't make that. Even though it seems like one you can call, just to call him or the next person.
And see, I'm supposed to call Sandy whenever I get to call whoever I get to call, so I can't call her.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, that's why I don't necessarily believe in the prayer chain thing, because not because I don't think it can work, it's just that it, generally speaking, just doesn't work because of all these kinds of things. That's why I just look for...
So you don't open it up to everybody?
Well, I will open it up, and I will say, if you are... But I will preach so hard on it that if you don't have a heart for prayer, you won't sign up, because I just want... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, something like that, that I know I can depend on. Because if I call you, James, and I'm depending on you to pray for me while I'm in Greensboro speaking, and you forgot about it, or it's not a high enough priority for you to do, or you're off playing golf in a golf tournament and you don't care, then I don't want you to be my prayer warrior. Doesn't mean you're a bad guy. Doesn't mean I have any less love or respect for you. I just don't want you to be my prayer warrior. Because I need somebody I know that I can pick up the phone and say, you know, Jessica just called me and her mom's got cancer. We need to pray. Okay? Or whatever the circumstances might be about something. You know, so that's the kind of thing. So the prayer chain, I think, is a concept that's good, but it just has too many potential flaws in it. So I think you're better off to find a smaller core of people that you know you can depend on. And if it just starts out, it's just you and Sandy to begin with, that's better than nothing. At least you know you can depend on it to get taken place. So, question? Yes.
I think I have the answer to my question, but I just want to see if I can hear anything else.
Okay, Daniel is getting ready to ask a question that he already has the answer to.
It is is the fact that singles need fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our foot in the door to provide the fellowship to get them in. But it's more than that. And you have 5 questions. You ask all these questions the best you can. And that makes your plan for your ministry, for your singles ministry. And you go out and basically try to develop your ministry based on these 5 questions. And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work, okay? Well, there's a couple things in that. First of all, I can tell you that I have failed many times in particular programs or things, okay, that I've tried. There's things that I've tried that just didn't work, okay? And I was convinced that they would work, but they just didn't. But when you talk about if you go through the whole process, and what you've got through these 5 questions are the ability to be able to create a vision or to enhance a vision if you've already got an established ministry or any of these other things to begin the process of you brainstorming and thinking about who we're going to try to reach and all that. Okay, but if you go through that whole thing and it doesn't work at all, there's a couple of questions that we have to ask ourselves. And these are hard questions. First of all, while I believe there is a need for singles ministry and will be one for a long, long time, I am not 100% convinced that God has called every church to do that. Okay? And so it's possible that God just hasn't called your church to do singles ministry. Okay, now there's a lot of reasons and factors that, and you know, there's some churches that do a great job at reaching certain parts of the community, you know, young families and things like that. There are certain churches that are better at reaching senior adults and things like that. And so there are certain niches, I think, sometimes that God just gives certain churches to do that they'll do well at. And so one of the legitimate questions we have to ask is this really what God wants here? Now, in our flesh, it's hard for us to understand because we know there's a need, like where you're at on a base where you know there's obviously a huge need. And yet, would God say, nah, I don't want to have a singles ministry there, or not the one that you're trying to create, or you know what? And that's hard for us to accept. But you know, there's a lot of things in your life. I'll give you a good example. My wife and I, we have one child, and we would love to have a brother or sister for my little girl. And as far as we know, there's no physical reasons and that kind of thing that we shouldn't be able to do that. And yet, for whatever reason, God has not blessed us with that second child. Now, from an earthly perspective, our window is getting narrower and narrower. Okay? And so that makes no sense to me. Now, I may not be a good father or a good husband. My wife's wonderful, okay? She's a great mom and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, and she's godly and prays and spiritual and all that kind of stuff. It makes no sense to me why God would not see that as a good thing for me and my family. If you could hear my little 6-year-old daughter pray for a brother or sister every night, there's hardly a night goes by that I don't cry when I listen to her pray about it. She knows Jesus, has a personal relationship with him, and has had one since she was 3 years old. And she gets it. And she's praying away with the faith of a child. And I'm sitting there getting more and more skeptical all the time. You know? That makes no sense to me. So when we look at even in our ministries and we go, well, God, this seems like it ought to be a good idea. Why wouldn't this work? Why shouldn't it work? There's singles out here. There's a need for them here. And we put all this energy and work and resources into it, and then it doesn't work. But I think at some point we have to be willing to say, God, maybe it's not your will. And if I've stepped out of something that I shouldn't have, then forgive me and let me back up and make sure that this is something you're wanting to do. You know, but sometimes you just have to keep tweaking too, okay? You know, you take this and you come up with a plan, and you may have to, you know, like these guys that are in established ministry. I imagine part of the reason you're here is you realize you've done some good things. But you realize there's things you need to figure out or work on, or maybe there's more people groups or whatever out there that you want to reach. So
I think that's the most important thing, is that you ask God, because singles seems to be such a fickle group. I mean, it's such a hard group. And you have to just know that you're doing the right thing. I think, like with the dances and things, if your senior pastor doesn't agree with it, totally, if you're in leadership, you should follow that. Beyond that, if you are the leader and you chose to do a dance, which is a brave move, you know, you have to support it and you have to say, okay, because there's not going to be people that like it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, going to be people that say, it's sin, and how can you do this in the church?
Sure.
But as long as you have your senior pastor's support and you know that you're doing the right thing, you have the right motives, you just have to stand on it. Just as ironic as it is, sometimes you stand alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the single ministry.
Absolutely.
So,
sure.
You know, you have to know before you go into it. And like you said, if it's not what you're supposed to do, please mm-hmm. find out before you start. Because you won't be able to make it if you don't. I mean, it's so hard.
As far as the dance goes, to get around it, like he said, you can do barbecue. We do Memorial Barbecue, 4th of July Barbecue. We did a game night and had somebody play a guitar and music. We filled up our fellowship hall.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do dance, but we still
sure.
do music.
And remember, these things are only tools. They're just tools. They're not theological things. They're not things that I think are absolutes. They're just different ways to reach people. And you've got to work within the framework that whatever your church and your pastor has for that. And that's right. That's right. Well, let's pray. I got to get you out of here so you can make your next time with it. Thank you very much for being here, and I hope that this has helped at least some to get you thinking towards what are the next steps in your ministry or how to get one going or whatever with that. And I'll be around all day, so if I can help you answer any other questions you think of later, I'd be glad to do that. Father, thank you for these folks. And I just pray, Father, that as we've looked at your word and some of the commands that you've given us in Scripture, and Father, I pray as it specifically relates to single adults, I pray that you would give these folks wisdom and discernment and anointing.
Yes.
That, Father, when they go back to their church or their particular area of ministry, that they would come up with game plans, Father, that would help to reach single adults in their community. And I pray, Father, that you would bless these efforts on their part, because we all know, Father, there's just kind of this fine line sometimes with us is whether we're walking with you or not in some of this stuff. And so we want to know. We want to do it because you want us to do it. And we want to reach people that you want us to reach. And so give us wisdom. Give us discernment. And give us the faith to endure, even when things don't always work the way we think they're going to. Bless them the rest of the day. Help them to gain the knowledge and the tools that they need to go back to their home city and reach singles for Jesus Christ. And it's in His name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
God bless you guys. Have a great day.
Amen.